Have you been thinking about dabbling in making, repurposing, or even quiltifying some clothes for yourself? Well, today's guest has a passion for do-it-yourself sewing and making garments in a way that is not terrifying and actually quite achievable. Today, I'll have a chat with Wendy Liu. Hello and welcome to the Quilter on Fire podcast, where I explore the stories, the connections, and the joy of guests in the sewing, quilting, making worlds. I'm your host, Brandi Maslowski, the Quilter on Fire, and I can't wait to share this week's episode with you. So here we go. My guest today is Wendy Liu. She is a YouTube sensation on the do-it-yourself clothing scene, with videos ranging from the supplies you need to get started all the way to thrift flips and viral dresses. She's kind of a dress queen, actually. She made her own wedding dress. She pounces on do-it-yourself projects that people are desperately trying to figure out on their own at home, like how to resize your jeans and making a dress from only scraps. She has such great playlists like Wendy Tries Everything, Self-Care, Travel, and recently she even did a video on pounding flowers. Her YouTube channel is called With Wendy, and she is approaching 1.5 million followers. It's a whole bunch of really original content. So let's explore the story of Wendy Liu. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so exciting because I have been dabbling in a little bit of alterations in my clothing. I've had some fun with Bernina fabric, making some jeans and stuff like that. But I think this is a great topic for anyone because at quilt shows over the last few years, we've seen this explosion of people making their clothing into kind of quiltified clothing. And you do so many fun things on your channel. But before we get started diving into all the things you're doing on your channel, I want to start by taking a little look back at where you got started. So when do you first remember putting stitch to fabric?
It all started with my mom. She learned how to sew from her own mother. And I grew up with my mom on her sewing machine as a normal place to hang out in the house. I, like many of my YouTube followers, find the sound of a sewing machine very comforting. And it just kind of reminds you of a cozy time. So she would start with showing me how to sew little pockets, or she would show me how to make little dresses for my dolls. And through that, I think I just started to naturally pick up the way sewing construction works. It's very 3D. It requires your mind to really visualize things from the inside out. But I found through my mom's guidance, it became pretty easy to conceptualize that. And I think that's a skill set that I carry to this day. Like when I look at clothing and I try to reverse engineer it, I find my brain just naturally kind of pieces it together. And sometimes it's a puzzle, but it definitely never is overwhelming. I find it actually quite fun.
Yeah, I'm always in admiration of the people who are making like teddy bears and animals and 3D things. And clothing, of course, has to fit on our body. Yes. So do you remember kind of the first things you dabbled with? What were the first few things you made?
Oh my gosh. When I think about it, it goes really far back because when I was a teenager, I took a home ec course at school. And for that, we had to sew something. And in the class, you were required to sew like a lunch bag or a pair of boxer shorts. But then I would go through those pretty quick. And then I would pull up some pattern that I bought from Fabricland or something and work on a blouse or something that I was making. So I feel like sewing, if anything, was kind of a dormant skill. I wouldn't consider myself very fashion inclined. I wasn't, you know, didn't have like a passion for fashion. But if I got inspired by a specific fabric or a specific pattern, I would make it. I made my own graduation dresses back when I graduated from high school. But those never feel like they fit into the timeline of where I am now, because I don't know, it felt very like just for fun and just a hobby back then. And I don't really feel like I intensely applied myself in terms of challenging myself to find things that were actually on trend or that other people would find interesting. I don't know. It seemed very homegrown at the time. But yeah, I would make little blouses, bags, shirts, dresses. And then once I went into university, I had no time to touch a sewing machine. Also, like, I didn't bring a sewing machine with me to university. And so it really just like became a total back burner of a skill. It was inside my brain, but I didn't utilize it in any way.
Yeah. So let's continue with that story. So what did you take in school?
In school? Yes. The reason I did not have any time was because I was taking business and engineering. The school I went to offers them as like a dual degree. So you can get two bachelor's in 5 years. This is why I had no time. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think those were some very fruitful years making friends and learning about myself and obviously finishing my degree. It wasn't until I entered the business school that was the same year that I bought a nicer laptop for editing video. That was the same year that I bought a camera because I was starting to get interested in photography. And all of those things kind of coincided with my growing interest in watching YouTube. I just realized like, oh my gosh, this looks like so much fun. I wish I could make YouTube videos too. I was always that friend who would make like a little compilation video from us going on vacation or a little weekend getaway. And so kind of applied those skills and wanted to make YouTube videos, but you can't make YouTube videos about nothing. And so I thought about it and I was like, do I have any skills that are of any possible interest to the general public? And I took sewing from the deep recesses of my brain and was like, you know what? I'm going to share sewing, even though I actually don't sew and could not consider myself a person very interested in sewing. But I went home. I mean, I was on a student budget, so I guess that added to my interest in being able to make my own clothes. And so from third year to fifth year, every winter break, summer break, when I was back home in Calgary, I would be on my mom's machine. I would be like balancing my camera on a stack of books and trying to film the process of me making various items. They were all very baggy, loose fit, you know, low intensity items at first. I think my very first video doesn't even exist on the channel anymore because when I rewatched it a year or so later, I was like, this is not good. And I don't want this to be on the internet anymore. But that's how it all started. And it's bizarre to me how a skill that I was so negligent of has become so integral to my day-to-day life and work. But that's one of the biggest life took me by surprise paths that I've had.
Well, it's really kind of neat how your mom kind of planted that creative seed early on. And then when you were in school and you started taking the business side of things, those entrepreneurial rumblings started happening. So you started your videos while you were in university. And how did your sewing blossom from there? Like you started making a couple videos. Did the things start going crazy right away?
No, definitely not right away. I feel like, so back when I went to university, you have to remember this was like over 10 years ago. I feel like fashion trends, what was popular, was much more widely defined. I would just look across my university campus and I would feel like, oh, there are certain signature items that it feels like almost every person here owns and wears. And those were the types of things that I would start out trying to make, like cardigans, sweaters. If I came across anything that I didn't know how to do, thankfully the internet was starting to be a blossoming place full of sewing expertise and knowledge. And so I just embraced that I was self-teaching through the internet how to do things. Some things I'd be really proud of how they turned out. Other things I would be like, let's not zoom in here because I don't want people to look too closely.
Yeah.
And I really feel this has become a message central to my YouTube channel, which is it's possible through brute force and constant sewing to see tangible growth in your skills. I used to feel very insecure about the fact that I didn't go to fashion school. I have no fashion training. Why am I on the internet showing people how to do things? And over time, I kind of overcame that insecurity by accepting that, oh, I'm not really necessarily showing people this is the technical way to do things, but I am sharing with people, this is what I'm learning, this is what I'm trying, and I'm giving them a realistic view of what it looks like to be a first timer or a newbie at a new sewing technique. At the same time, though, I have gotten significantly better at sewing. Like you mentioned that I made my own wedding dress. And I think back when I first started my YouTube channel, I would have never imagined I was going to make my own wedding dress. Actually, I think even a year before my wedding, I was still iffy about whether I wanted to make my wedding dress. And And that's proof that my skills got so much better. But what's funny too, is that even now, since getting, I think I've been married for 6 years, I look at my wedding dress and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many things I could do better. And so that's just the journey I've embraced, which is I'm not a finished product. I am a person who's growing and learning, and I've found the value in sharing that with my audience.
Yeah. And I think that's the kind of stuff that really hits home with people. So you're doing such a great job.
Thank you. I try to reassure myself that the vast majority of people who are interested in sewing also haven't gone to fashion school.
Yeah.
So I believe I am in like a large pool of people still.
Yeah, it's so true. So after you were finished university, did you try to launch into a career in engineering or like before getting into YouTube?
Yeah, I probably my studies in university gives away the fact that I'm quite a risk averse person and I like to have options and I like to, you know, choose relatively safe paths. So out of the business and engineering, I certainly preferred the business. And I also was really excited at the possibility of moving to Toronto. I think I've just always gravitated towards living in a bigger city. So I moved to Toronto, found a marketing job, and I was doing it for 2 years. And then on my weeknights and weekends, I would sew. By that time, when I moved to Toronto, I had been doing my YouTube channel as a side school hobby for 3 years. And so my parents, especially my mom, could tell that I was taking this pretty seriously. And so she gifted me my first sewing machine that I owned here in Toronto. For those 2 years, that's just how I ran my YouTube channel. Like all my weeknights and weekends were dedicated to it. And then I guess closing in on that 2 year mark, I started to feel like, wow, there's a lot of people who are able to make this their living, not just people who live in LA or New York, but also people who live in Toronto. And I felt inspired. I felt like if I don't try now, maybe I'll never know if this is possible to succeed. And so I asked for my parents' blessing to try to get my YouTube channel fully off the ground within 1 year financially.
How did they take it when when you went to them and asked them that, or sort of talked to them, but had this conversation? How did they take it?
Oh my gosh, I was so nervous, but I think I actually was very moved and shocked that they were quite supportive of it because, you know, I'm risk averse and I probably get some of that from my parents. Like they also try to make prudent decisions in life in terms of finances and stability. And so this is maybe one of the riskiest conversations we've had, but one thing I do think helped was that I had already been working at it for so long. So they could tell this wasn't some fad or like passing idea that I had made up. I wasn't telling them like I'm moving to Europe and becoming a guitar virtuoso or something that I just had like no foundation in whatsoever.
Yeah.
And yeah, they approved. So we agreed that for the year, they would help to cover my rent, and my YouTube at that point was making enough money to cover my living expenses. And being in Toronto, those two numbers are like basically the same, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they were supportive. It was scary though, too. It was, even though they supported my decision, it felt hard to tell them throughout that year how things were going, because I don't know, I think I was still like holding my breath for quite a while. So they supported me, but I definitely took the whole year just like quietly puttering away and not really sharing too much, because I did feel nervous about failing them or that kind of thing.
Yeah. So how did your channel change and grow that first year? Did you hone in on a topic right away and you're like, yeah, I'm doing do-it-yourself sewing? Or did you kind of try all kinds of different things and then ease into something you really loved?
It definitely was an extension of sewing, but just more. Like, I think I was able to hit releasing a video every week or at most every other week, which back then was kind of like the YouTube standard if you really wanted your channel to grow.
Yeah.
And it felt like there were no shortage of sewing ideas because a lot of topics had not yet been explored on my channel at that time. Yeah. And fashion, thankfully, is an industry that's like intensely cyclical and there's a whole seasonality to it. especially living in a place like Toronto, where we actually do experience the four seasons, it just feels like the switch is natural between like spring clothing, summer clothing, fall, winter. And there's a fast enough pace that, yeah, people would ask me, like, where do you get your ideas from? And I would just, I always felt like there was no shortage of ideas back then, because there's so much unexplored terrain in terms of things you could sew on the internet.
Yeah, so true. So was there kind of a defining moment in that year where you realized, yeah, this is my thing. I actually can do this for a living.
Yeah, basically, I was just constantly watching my YouTube AdSense to see how the number was improving. And it really did, I think, take the whole year for me to reach the point where I'm like, wow, I'm making enough to cover me existing in this city. Yeah. And so I told my parents that, you know, our year had come up, I didn't need their financial support anymore. And they were okay with me continuing. Back then, though, I still would not have guessed that that decision would lead to me now running my YouTube channel for like over 10 years full time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's strange to me now that most of my friends who stayed in the corporate environment have changed their jobs like 3, 5, maybe even more times, and I'm still doing basically the exact same job. Yeah, I could not have foreseen that that would be the case. But I guess I am also a person who likes a certain amount of predictability. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, maybe I am the type who would have stayed in one job for a long time. And hence it makes sense that I'm still doing my YouTube channel.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm just thinking for the listener right now, if they have something they've been trying to do on YouTube, or you know, they want to blossom in some way like you have. Can you give us kind of a really general snapshot of what kind of streams of income are possible for a YouTuber?
Yeah, essentially the way YouTube works is unique to many other content creation platforms, which is they have ads showing on all the videos that don't have any copyright issues. And all you got to do is upload a video. As people watch the video, they'll naturally watch the ads that come before it or during it or at the end of the video. And every time an advertiser pays YouTube to share their ad, YouTube gives a cut to the person who created the video. And so if you start out and you're not getting a lot of views, then the ad revenue will be low. But basically, as you get more views, you're going to earn more money on ads. And so for a lot of people, the way to grow is you can go with quantity, like uploading lots and lots of videos just to see which ones happen to strike a chord. Or you can invest a lot of effort in making very high quality videos that are kind of guaranteed to get a lot of views, but might take a little bit more effort on your side. People kind of approach it with different strategies. And so when I was starting out on YouTube, I didn't have as many subscribers and I didn't have as many people watching my videos. And over time, I figured out ways to make the videos more approachable, entertaining, interesting for people to watch. And in doing so, that's how you start to make more money. And that once you're making money through people watching your YouTube videos, then a few other possible revenue streams will expand. Like if you ever see YouTubers say like this video is sponsored by such and such company, then what that means is that the company has paid the YouTuber directly to shout out their product or their service. And those are brand partnerships. They pay generally, I would say, a bit better than ad revenue. And then the next pie slice after that really depends on the YouTuber. It's like you could sell merchandise, you could sell classes. If you're like a comedian, you can go on tour and sell tickets. It's very open-ended after that. But I would say the most common ways to make money are through ad revenue and through brand partnerships, which is honestly an extension of what it was like in the blogging world. People were making money putting advertisements on their blog posts, and also making money by having companies be specifically featured on a blog post.
Yeah, so great. So let's give everyone one example. I recently watched one of your videos and you were doing this really cool exercise app. It was something on your phone.
So my Copilot app.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, that's an example of a brand partnership. So Copilot is an app well, it's more than an app. It's like a personal trainer, but you just access it through the app. They get to know what tools you have at home and like what your goals are, what's realistic for you and your workout plan. And they create a workout plan that works for you. And this was really helpful for me back when I was postpartum in the middle of COVID, because I had, like gyms were not open. That's one thing. It made sense for me because at the time my body was recovering from labor and also just like the strain of caring for a baby. It's very physical and it just worked really well for me. But I actually continued to use the app from that time. And so recently they wanted to make another video sharing their service, reminding people like, hey, if you're interested in having someone to be a virtual personal trainer so that you can train wherever you're traveling or if you're at home, whatever the environment. And so we made another video recently where I was sharing that I'm actually pregnant again. So we're expecting for this new year. And through that, I've had some updates made to my workout plan with trainers so that it makes sense for my body. And yeah, that's just a very standard example of a brand partnership. But for me, like I try really hard to choose ones that are from companies or missions or values that I believe in and support, because I don't know, I don't want to share something with my audience that I think is not good.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Well, when you're true to you and you're talking about a product and you really love it, it just comes through. People can tell, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. I'm not a very good actress. You just need to make it easy for me to speak genuinely and enthusiastically about something. And part of that is actually enjoying or believing it myself.
Yeah, it's so great to be real. And I particularly loved the part of that video where you were trying to exercise on the mat with your baby beside you and you were, you know, snuggling and exercising and looking at the app all at the same time. And it seems so achievable for someone who's, you know, who has a little tiny one that they're looking after at the same time.
Yeah, I was shocked at how achievable it was because I'm so bad at working out. I don't know how you are with your fitness, but like part of me imagines with your background in firefighting, like you have to have a lot of awareness about what it takes to be in shape, but.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm off and on with my exercise. I have so much fun with my Peloton. That's the thing I'm doing now. So I guess I need to try to get a brand partnership with Peloton or something like that.
Yeah.
I do have fun. That is the one thing that I have stuck to. I do my little morning routine and I have a lot of fun with it. And the cool thing about Peloton, since I travel so much, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be doing an ad for them if I'm not a partner, but because I travel so much, it's in a lot of the Hilton hotels that I stay in. So I get
no
to do it.
Way.
Yeah, I get to do it while I'm traveling too. So
that is neat.
Yeah. So anyway, I want to take a little jump out of the storyline for a minute and ask you, where are you living now and who are your loved ones that you share your world with every day?
Oh, so yeah, I still live in Toronto now. Since that first move to Toronto, I have bounced around a couple of different apartments or shapes or sizes. But now I live in a home downtown with my partner. His name is Dan. He makes occasional appearances on the YouTube channel for the most hawk-eyed viewers. And during the pandemic, we added a cat. I didn't grow up with cats, so I definitely let Dan take the lead on that because I just don't have a lot of pet experience. But through having this cat in our life, her name is Sagwa, I've definitely warmed up a lot to just like, the joy of having a pet around. And in the pandemic, we also added a daughter to our family. Her name is Marla. She's a toddler now. And this year we will add someone else. My parents, who were living in Calgary, and that's where I grew up during the pandemic. Oh, man, a lot of things happened during the pandemic. But during the pandemic, they moved here. They got a house in the Toronto area. So it's really nice that we can all be together. Yeah. And my in-laws live just outside the city as well. So we're very grateful to have the family close by, especially now with little kids and stuff like that.
Yeah. And congratulations. You're going to have another one on the way. So what month are you due in 2024?
Oh gosh, I'm due in April. I am quite nervous. But it is nice to have gone through it once before.
Yeah.
It provides a little bit of clarity.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. And I always try, like, I know sometimes when people are going through something new in life, their friends will tell them the worst story they've ever heard about it or something like that. When I hear of someone who's pregnant, I'm like, okay, what's my best pregnancy story I can share? I always try to tell the good things. But congratulations. I'm excited to see what happens with that little adventure.
Me too.
You're going to nail it. You'll have fun. You have one already, so you know what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think this time, like, I feel actually a bit more motivated to be sewing while having a baby. I think maybe the first time it was just so overwhelming. I couldn't even wrap my head around how to pull out a machine while there's a baby around. Yeah. But this time I'm excited to sew. I also think it's really cute and sweet that my older one is reaching an age where she's starting to help out with the kitchen and she's helping with cleaning. And so I'm like, oh, very soon, I feel like we can start sewing together.
Yeah. And do you have a plan about how you're going to tell her, or have you told her already that she's going to have a little brother or sister?
Yeah, we told her in the most casual way. We just said, like, you're going to be a big sister. I think we didn't want to make it a big deal because it's an idea that she has to take time to wrap her head around herself.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what her perspective is on what it means to be a big sister. So we told her and she was like, oh, okay. But then as my, like, physical belly grows larger, I think the idea also becomes more tangible in her head.
Yeah, the conversations will happen. And I remember way back when my son was born 21 years ago, we didn't have another child that we had to prepare for a new birth coming into the home, but we had a dog. We were really concerned about how do we prepare this dog for a baby?
Yes. So, no, that's so real.
Yeah, our cat was part of that.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, our cat was not impressed. When we brought the baby home, it was fascinating how, like, when she cried, it almost created like an animalistic response in her cat. Like, she would start meowing and looking at us with a very, like, please do something type of facial expression.
Yeah, I remember that too. And I think we did do a little research trying to figure out what should we do to prepare a dog. And we ended up bringing a blanket home from the hospital immediately for the dog to smell. And then a day or two later when I came home, we introduced. But yeah, our dog would look at us with the same, like, okay, this thing is crying. Like, what are you going to do about
it?
So fond memories. Okay, so I want to get back into the story now and talk a little bit about design, because you come up with such incredible ideas for your channel. Like, it's almost as if you're in the mind of your followers. Like, they might be struggling at home with something and you're nailing it. You're doing it on your channel, right? So when you see something in the world that sparks an idea, how do you capture that?
Oh, yeah. The ideas really do come from any place. Maybe like browsing social media, or sometimes I just go out for a walk and I see things. I'll often just take a picture. I mean, thankfully nowadays, like, there's photos galore on the internet of anything you could be interested in. If there's a dress that I want to make, I can look up how it looks from the front, from the side, from the back, close up. And I kind of compile all of those images to help me reverse engineer how I want to put it together. At one point, I think it was a challenge on my channel to try to replicate things as exactly as possible. But now I've found I've become a lot more adventurous in, like, we're going to do the same techniques, same maybe silhouette or shape, but I'll purposefully choose a different material or something so that it just has a little bit different flair to it. And I don't know, I've also run into times where it's not felt good, or my audience has made comments about, like, oh, is this like copying a designer, you know, like kind of like stealing their work and that kind of thing. And that's definitely not the angle I've ever wanted to go towards. So I've found a lot of fun now in, like, making my own version of something. But if you wanted to make an exact copy of the thing that it was inspired of, you could follow all the same techniques in my video to achieve the same outcome. And like, it very much depends on the time of year. For example, like right now when we're talking, we're getting ready for a new year of, like, red carpet season. And that's usually a fun time to be paying attention because all the, you know, fancy outfits will come out. And I don't know, it's definitely the most, like, fantastical time in fashion. And the season is changing. So finally we can start shedding, like, kind of the thicker winter layers and get ready for spring and summer.
Yeah, I love all the different ideas that you bring to the table on your YouTube channel. Like, you're not just doing a whole bunch of projects start to finish and teaching people how to sew. You're pouncing on ideas that are super fun and current right now. You're giving people ideas on how to take things out of their closet and change them, or find things at a thrift store, or use a piece of clothing they love already and make something with that as a pattern. Like, I just, it's such a great idea, right? And I recently made a dress for myself for the first time. Mm-hmm. And I've never followed a garment pattern in my life, and I've never bought one, and I didn't have one. So I thought, well, the only thing I really can do is take a dress that I already have. So I found the simplest A-line kind of easiest dress possible, and I made it. And I had to change a lot of things. Like, I couldn't use a quarter inch seam allowance like I'm used to in quilting. I had to, like, maybe I'll make this a half inch just to be safe, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Or 5/8 inch or whatever it is. And it ended up actually being fine. It turned out okay. And the hardest part was the pockets for sure. But
wow,
I just went online, right? And I found all kinds of videos about how to make different pockets and stuff. And I ended up making the pockets that matched the ones I cut out. And I was really proud of myself for getting the words Bernina inside my pocket, the right side up.
Oh my gosh.
The fabric wasn't backwards, but I love the idea that you're bringing videos to your channel that people are probably already thinking about at home. Like, it's
That's my hope. Yeah. And honestly, I think similarly to quilting, sewing in general, whether it's for clothing or quilting, it still takes a lot of inspiration because it's honestly quite a grind sometimes. Yeah. And so I feel like I have to pick ideas that have enough lightning power in them to make a person be like, oh my gosh, I want to do that too. Otherwise, like, if the project is just too sleepy, it's never going to get done.
Yeah. Well, and I love your covers. So I think they're called YouTube covers. I'm not sure, but they're the pictures on your YouTube channel.
Oh,
and
yeah, the thumbnails.
Yeah. So YouTube thumbnails. So how do you go about creating a really catchy thumbnail? What are your tips on that one?
My tips. Well, yeah, this has become something that's become even more important over the years on YouTube, which is that the thumbnail image really is, you know, they say, like, don't judge a book by its cover, but truly, like, that is how all the videos on YouTube are being judged constantly, by their thumbnail. I always try to include the inspiration behind the project or me working on the project. I think it's important for me to make sure when people see the thumbnail that it says something about fashion and or sewing. One of those two things should be very clearly covered visually. And I think things have changed a lot in thumbnails. People, I find, definitely are throwing in a lot more graphics, like arrows and highlights and sparks. I can't quite pinpoint what I'm doing, but I do think it's important for it to be clear.
Yeah, and I think I'll just say that some of the things that I love that you do in your thumbnails are you always, almost every single time, have you in the thumbnail. Mm. And, you know, so you're in there as the feature. And, you know, if you look at the span of time you've been doing it, your hair has changed in a whole bunch of cute different ways. And, you know, you've got different, you'll have it's not always like some beautiful glamorous thing where you're on the cover. Sometimes you're going like, oh, like you're rolling your eyes or you're doing something. And it really is, oh, I'm drawn in as the viewer. I want to go check it out because what did you do wrong or whatever.
Yeah. There's always going to be at least one big regret moment.
So that's a lot of fun. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the name. So what's the name of your YouTube channel and why did you choose that?
Oh, right. Yeah, it's called With Wendy. And I chose it because, like I said in my story, I had no idea what my channel was going to be about in the beginning. And I think there's even a short period where I was uploading my progress videos of me trying to follow a workout program. And I'm pretty sure I uploaded 2 videos and then was like, this is not sustainable. I don't like working out. And there's no way I can become a fitness YouTuber if this is the footing that I'm starting on. And so, yeah, I just knew, like, oh, the only thing I can guarantee is that I will be here. And, you know, had I known that it would be related to fashion and sewing, I definitely could have picked something that was more on topic. But yeah, it's With Wendy because I'm there. And the only thing we do now is talk about sewing and or fashion with like a few sprinklings of how my life is going. That's about it.
That's so great. So let's talk a little bit about how you do things and why. So what do you bring to the world on your YouTube channel in a nutshell?
The thing I really want people to take away from my videos is inspiration and motivation. I want to bring ideas that are exciting to people, like project ideas that are exciting, but I also want to give people that spark that's like, okay, it's not that hard. Everything is one step at a time. You know, even if I mess up really bad, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. I start over with a new piece of fabric and I've learned something and I can keep going at it. Like, I've made so many sewing mistakes over the years, and you know, YouTube, social media, it has that issue where it's not as fun of a place to share like the downsides. No one wants to watch me unpick stitches for 2 hours, but yeah, sometimes it happens. And so you kind of get this false idea that like, oh, people who know how to do things are really good at it. They're so fast, but like so many hobbies and projects take a long time. And I just try to share that as authentically as possible. Those are the things I want to take away. And more recently, the thing that I've added to that is a desire to improve sewing literacy. I've certainly come a really long way in terms of terminology and my awareness of different techniques. And I'm trying to share that with my audience too. So people might notice as they watch my videos, if I say something like basting stitch, then there's like a little definition that'll appear to give people a little guidance on like, what does that mean? You know, if I start talking about like a yoke on a shirt, I'll have a little explainer that's like, this is what a yoke is. And I find through learning those words, those terminology and techniques, like I've found myself a lot more aware of the little details in sewing. And so I've hoped to pass that along to my viewers too, that they'll become a little bit more fluent in how garment sewing works.
Yeah, it's so great. And you really key on upcycling and do it yourself.
Yeah.
You're so great with taking risk. And it's such a brave step to cut something up, to make something fit your body better and that kind of thing. So why is that so important to you?
Yeah, I think over time, it didn't start out this way. Like, it really was just sewing for fun. But over time, the industry of fast fashion has expanded so much. And with that came a growing awareness of the harms of overconsumption and overproduction. And so, yeah, just being someone who didn't want to see or perpetuate that, I started to think outside the box of like, what are some other ways that I can approach sewing and learning to sew, but it's not so wasteful or promoting of like, oh, you need constantly new clothes. I actually found thrift flipping quite intimidating at first. I don't know why that is. Like, maybe my brain was just oriented towards working with raw fabric because that's what I learned from my mom. Yeah. But after a few thrift flips, I started to really embrace it because I was like, oh, it's actually amazing because so much of the work has already been done for you if you know how to kind of like take advantage of the seams that are there and just add the seams that you want to see. It's exciting too, like, to see the before and after. It's always nice when you put on something and it just fits you so much better than it did before. It just feels good. Yeah. And yeah, like the something from nothing mentality has always been important to me. I guess I was like raised quite frugal minded. So the more I get to do that type of thing, the more fulfilled I feel.
Yeah, so good. And so do you also have a website and a YouTube channel?
I do, but I would say like most of my activity is on the YouTube channel. Like the website, it exists to complement it. For example, yeah, last year, one of my big projects with my assistant was to take my existing YouTube videos, but on the website, create complimentary blog posts that go way deeper into the step-by-step so that the YouTube video can be a bit more about like the adventure of it all, but the blog post can be the place where people who really want to sit and get into the details can like actually read a step-by-step at their own pace and see still images of it so that it's just like a little bit easier to digest from a learning perspective.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just do a quick little plug here about where can people go if they want to find the website and where can they go if they want to find you on YouTube?
YouTube, it's youtube.com/withwendy. And the website is withwendy.com. We're trying to keep it easy for everyone out here. So those are the two places. But if you search With Wendy, all one word, you'll find those things on the internet.
Yeah. And community is really huge for you. So tell me why the viewers who look at your channel are so important to you.
Yeah, in many ways, I feel excited that I have so much in common with my audience because I don't have a very technical or scholarly background. I often find we're like learning and exploring things together. And so it's like I'm bringing ideas to the table with my new YouTube videos, and their response basically helps me curate and think about what types of things they want to see next. So I would say it's like a very circular relationship. I bring something, they respond to it, I take that in as feedback. And like a lot of the things I've learned are because of their comments where they're like, oh, you should have used this foot when you were doing this technique. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right. How could I forget? And yeah, I find we're like sharpening each other through the process, which I appreciate. I think I used to find it scary for my audience to be able to highlight to me things that I missed, but actually it's become such a valuable way to learn and grow. And when they are like helping each other troubleshoot things in the comments, that makes me really happy too. So yeah, like the whole thing really can't exist without the audience. And weirdly, I'm the type of person who watches YouTube videos, but never comments. And I don't really exhibit the behavior that I love to see, which is the people like giving me their thoughts and feedback and also encouraging me or like telling me that they found a certain video very inspiring or motivational. I really, really appreciate the people who take the time to share that with me.
Yeah, that's so great. Okay, so let's dive into some of your collaborations. So you have a relationship with Bernina. So let's talk about that.
Oh yeah, this is how we met. Well, it might be a little bit embarrassing, but the sewing machine that my mom gave me was a very, I would say it's like a can-do attitude, but in a domestic machine. And I'm pretty sure the people at the Bernina head office were watching my videos and watching me try to wrangle like boatloads of fabric through this domestic machine. And they were just like, this girl needs a Bernina. I think that's how they found me and contacted me. They were like, let us help you because you cannot keep going like this. Yeah. So yeah, I love my Bernina. I have two sewing machines at home that are Bernina because when my assistant comes to sew with me, it's really helpful that we both have our own machines. And I also have a overlocker, which has definitely been an exciting new addition because I remember when my mom first got one, we were both like, woo, we're getting fancy. And yeah, it's nice to have one, especially for things like if I actually want to make clothes for my kid to wear, it's definitely nice to have like the more finished seams on the inside of the garment. Yeah, that's a partnership that has brought me a lot of joy. Like one, having an easier machine to sew on, but two, getting to meet other people in the sewing community through it, getting to like play with all of the different features. Maybe it awakens like my inner nerd about like sewing machine and construction and engineering. So yeah, that's a partnership that I found very rewarding.
Do you have any other collaborations? Like, have you ever collaborated with other creators?
Yeah, definitely with other creators. I feel like probably before the pandemic, it was even more so, but there's some Toronto creators that I've done work with. There's a girl named Amanda in Toronto who specializes in bullet journaling, and she's very artistic. She does lots of doodling. And so we randomly came up with this project where she was going to hand paint a whole swath load of flowers. And then I took the flowers and sewed them into finished garments. This was inspired by a dress that Taylor Swift wore to the Grammys. It's like an Oscar de la Renta dress. And so that was a really fun collaboration where we combined our own specialized skills. Like maybe people wouldn't think sewing and bullet journaling was a very obvious combination, but we made it work and it was so exciting to wear a painting. I've also done collaborations with other home design YouTubers like Lone Fox, The Sorry Girls, Alexandra Gator. If anyone watches a lot of home decor DIY, those are names that are very familiar with them. And we've done makeovers, we've done sewing or crafting projects that are suitable for the home. I guess, like, even though I do garment sewing, there's like loads of sewing projects that work in the house. And that's also an area where my mom definitely influenced me, because she's the one who sewed all of the valances and the curtains that went inside our home. She was always sewing like tablecloths and stuff like that. So even though I focus on garment, in the back of my mind, I'm always like, oh yeah, like I know how to make pillowcases and curtains and that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. And one thing we kind of, I don't know if this is a general thing or if it's just me, but I always imagine creators who, you know, kind of blossom on YouTube thinking about, okay, what's my favorite drink? Is it going to be a monster drink? Like, do you go out and approach companies that you love to try to get collaborations and connect with them?
I actually think I'm quite shy in this domain. I probably could do it more. But yeah, I don't know. I honestly think I'm just shy. I think I've become a person who's a lot more confident in approaching people or things and being like, hey, I love what you do. But it took other people doing that for me to help me realize, like, oh wow, it really is rewarding and, like, I don't know, not creepy to have a person compliment you. I think it's a reflection of my demeanor, like who I was in school or in social environments was always a person who's like fun loving, but still has, like, I don't know, a certain kind of like shyness, or like, I don't know, people wouldn't think I'm shy because I can be quite chatty, but I often also feel like the chattiness is to try to compensate for the fact that I'm like nervous or shy.
Well, it doesn't come through. It comes through as natural and humble and real, right? So that's really good.
Oh.
Okay, so I think, you know, the majority of my listeners are quilters, and I think mm-hmm. I'll probably get a whole bunch of messages after this if I don't ask you this question. So have you ever made a quilt?
Yes, actually, I'm like, wait, I should have talked about this earlier in this interview. But when I was in high school, that was also when there was a mom at our church who was quite proficient at quilting, and she had all the equipment. She had like a really nice setup in her home. I'm now that I've learned about things like the sewing work triangle, I think back and I'm like, oh yeah, she definitely had a really robust triangle. And I don't know how we even arranged this, but somehow we agreed, like, hey, I'm just going to come over for a few afternoons over the next couple of weekends, and she's going to teach me how to quilt. And so we did a very basic quilt where I just had a giant stack of squares of colors and textures that did not match each other whatsoever. But the whole point was to learn. And it was, yeah, definitely not motivated by like making anything spectacularly beautiful. But I pieced together all of the squares into a big, big grid. We did the border. I still have that quilt. It's not pretty, but it is very neat. And I think the thing that I actually really enjoyed about learning to quilt from her was that it was probably one of the most orderly environments that I've ever sewn before. Whereas garments, it's a lot of curves. It's a lot of like, you know, match this little point with this other part. And of course, as quilts get more complex, the piecing gets, you know, fancy. But at the time, just doing like a plain and simple straight square grid, and when you press it, this is how you press it so that they, you know, it reduces overlap. It was just like, wow, I didn't realize sewing could be so clean and methodical. Yeah. and not so kind of like curvy and unpredictable the way it is with making clothes.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite TV show of all time is called The Great British Sewing Bee. And I find it sometimes or not on Netflix, depending. But one of the things that always astonishes me is they really do show all of the aftermath of the scraps flying everywhere. They just let it be shown all over the floor throughout the show. And yeah, I'm like, that is quite messy. Yeah. But then I'm quite messy in quilting too.
No, to this day, I definitely don't have a workshop mindset in that regard. Like, I'm still trying to make sure all of my scraps land in the bin. And yeah, I forget. I like watch sewing shows and I forget how the way some people operate is like, you just let it all hang on the floor because you can just like clean it up afterwards. I think I need to embrace that more because it's probably slowing me down to be so meticulous with the garbage
can. Well, it's probably very good that you're quite neat. Okay, so in your creative practice, what brings you joy?
Definitely the feeling that I wish, the highest feeling I hope to share with my audience is if anyone actually does attempt to make their own clothes because of watching my content, that they too would also get to feel that really rewarding feeling of like you put something on, you're like, oh my gosh, I actually love the way this looks on me, or having a stranger compliment you and you can say like, oh, thanks, I made it. Like that's just a quintessentially joyous moment as a person who makes clothes. So that definitely gives me a lot of joy. I would say on a more personal level, I do find the challenge of problem solving with sewing very fun. And it's like, yeah, solving a puzzle, kind of at the end, the feeling of like nailing it, like a lot of garment sewing is like, you can't really see how it comes together until the final moment where you put it on. So there is a bit of like a self-reveal as to how it's going. And that's really rewarding. I think I am a person who really tries to embrace like learning throughout your entire life, like, you know, being a lifelong student, and that like learning doesn't mean it's confined into the boundaries of school. And so sewing, thankfully, has been a pursuit that is just like a constant unending wealth of things you could try, materials you could work with, techniques you could learn. I find even though I'm so much better over the years, like, for example, self-criticizing my own wedding dress, it's like, it's like it just never stops. I'll continue to learn more. And I'll, through that, kind of have my eyes opened to other things I could try to, or even, for example, how when I started, I would, you know, be a bit conservative and just use fabric that was like on sale or really affordable, you know, more attainable materials. But as I challenge myself, I'm like, okay, like, do we want to get into some fancy embroidered fabric or beadwork? All of those come with new challenges. But as the confidence and skill increases, it starts to kind of open those doors.
Yeah. Well, and I love that whole do-it-yourself mentality because, I mean, you actually, when I was scrolling through your YouTube channel, you actually have a video that says on it, thanks, I made it.
Yeah.
I could see how that's so satisfying. Like at quilt shows, when I approach people and I'm like, did you make your runners? You know, they actually quilted their runners and things like that. It's got to be gratifying for them to say, yes, I made it myself.
Yeah, so gratifying. Probably in your case, even more gratifying to be talking to someone else who also knows the time and effort that it takes to achieve such things. Yeah. That's like extra rewarding because, yeah, I think with how affordable and attainable clothing is, people really do forget the amount of work it takes to put together a garment. And yeah, to have other people who sew notice what you've made and be like, shoot, that took a lot of time and effort. You're like, yes, it did.
Absolutely. Okay, so right now we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk all about Wendy's studio space, some of the incredible projects she's featured on her channel. And we're going to talk about like the first videos and what went viral and those kind of things. So it's going to be so much fun. We'll be right back. Do you own a quilty biz? The Quilter on Fire podcast has gone from 1,000 to over 5,000 downloads a week over the last year. And there was also that one that hit 20,000. Remember Tula Pink? If you advertise anywhere, why not consider a podcast ad? Quilter on Fire podcast ads bring great value and they are not just here and gone. The ad stays up for the life of the podcast. Drop me a quick message or email me at brandy@quilteronfire.com to get your quilty business ad into the ears of thousands of quilters today. The Japan Textile Tour with the Quilter on Fire is a go. Travelers are now booking their flights and we start our tour from Tokyo to Kyoto on May 19th, 2024. There are a few spots left, so if you need to check Japan off your bucket list, call Judy at Opulent Quilt Journeys at 1-877-235-3767 to book your trip today. And we are back with Wendy Liu. Wendy, can you tell us about your studio space? Where do you create your videos and where do you sew?
Oh boy. Well, that's all in one place. So that's pretty easy. Our home has three bedrooms. So one we sleep in, one is for our kid, and the other one is all me. And it's a space that has, it's got a lot of different corners going on. You know, obviously I have a cabinet full of excess fabric. I have a pegboard that's covered in all my sewing tools. And then I bought like the longest desk I could possibly fit for my sewing machines and for sewing. And on any given day, I feel like it looks like a tornado in here, honestly. Back when we lived in an apartment that was a studio loft, I would describe my video making progress as like high tide and low tide, where high tide is when I'm in the middle of a project and my YouTube has kind of like consumed the whole room. I have tripods and lighting and cameras and fabric and dress form like all over the place. And then as soon as a video was done, I would call that low tide because I would recede back into the area that I said my sewing would be confined to. So now that it's in one room, I feel like it's just always high tide in this one room. I recently finished a significant chunk of making this room over. This room used to be a kitchen back when we bought the house, because our entire upper floor was one individual unit that the landlord lived in. So this room was the kitchen, and then obviously she used the bedroom for sleeping. And so we took out the kitchen, put in all of my sewing stuff. And there was a video I released where I showed like, okay, here it is after a big makeover. There's stuff that I'm still working on, of course, but that was the cleanest my studio has ever looked for that video. And then ever since that video went live, it's gone back to like the absolute chaos that it usually is. I am a person who does love an orderly space, so I try really hard to figure out ways that are smart to keep it organized. But yeah, right now I'm looking at it and I'm like, just like, oh dear.
Yeah, me too. I'm messy. In the same boat. Mine goes into disarray and then I clean it all up. So I have a lecture where I do Studio Magnificent and I talk about clearing clutter in your studio. And so that lecture actually is what keeps me in check, because I do it at least once a month. Yeah. And
you have to practice what you preach.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have to tell everybody that I have to show that I'm real, and it, you know, I'm a Tasmanian devil in this. It just goes crazy in here. And then I take the time to tidy it up and do that lecture. So let's talk a little bit about, you touched on it briefly. Let's talk a little bit about your video setup. Like, do you have 10 cameras? I see your videos sometimes are in different areas of your house.
Yeah.
So like in a nutshell, if someone was trying to imagine, what would a YouTuber's setup look like? So give us a glimpse into that.
Yeah, I think, the type of content you make definitely designates the type of setup you might have. Like for me, I have a couple of cameras. I feel like most of the time I make all my YouTube videos with three cameras, and it's because one of them is for me to talk to. One of them is to give a close up so that people can see like the fine details, because sewing is sometimes like broad strokes of me putting a garment on, but it's also sometimes so small, as in I'm trying to show them like the needle move as it does a specific stitch. So, and then the third camera is one that I hold in my hand for just kind of like a more casual use, whether I'm sharing an idea or a passing thought or reacting to how something went. So my setup is three cameras. I would say two to three cameras is probably the norm for a YouTuber. And then the other thing I have here is I call my fake sons, which they were introduced back when we were at our previous apartment, because in the wintertime, it honestly makes me so sad how quickly the sun goes down. It's like 4 p.m. and pitch black, and I'm just like, I can't live like this. So back then I bought these really huge overhead lights. They imitate sunlight, and for the sake of video purposes, it's actually quite important to have some control over the color tone of your light, because that determines how the video, like how realistic or sunny the video looks. And so now in this studio, I have my two fake suns mounted near the ceiling. So as soon as they're on, you can no longer tell what time of day it is in here. It just feels like it's the middle of the day constantly. And that's the setup I have. Sometimes I'll sit behind my desk. I guess we're just visually used to that format. Kind of reminds me of like Mr. Dress Up, when he's behind the desk and you're watching him work. And sometimes I sit with the audience on the same side as me on the table. It kind of just depends on my mood or like what I'm working on. I've got a big mirror. I also do share my room with a washing machine, because there was nowhere else on this floor for it to go. Yeah, and I think that's actually ended up being more of a pro than a con, because a lot of sewing involves like washing the fabric or preparing it in some way. That's my setup. It's I don't think it's perfect, but it is good enough for what I need right now.
And now, so when you create all this content, do you get it into like some kind of program with like three layers of all of the videos and then you just edit it all at once yourself? Or do you have this army of people working for you?
Yeah, I have a small army, which I really appreciate. I actually do love editing videos. So it was actually a part of the YouTube process that I was a bit sad to let go. But the general wisdom with YouTube is that if you want to grow and expand your channel, you'll have to focus on things that only you can do, and anything that someone else can do, you should try to outsource them. And so It's very normal for one of the first things you outsource to be video editing. So I have two editors who kind of take turns editing the videos for me. I give them the footage. I write them a very detailed breakdown of what happened in this video and how would I like it to be portrayed to my audience. Yeah, that part's fun. It's like building the story and putting it together. They'll send back the edits and I'll give my feedback. And the editing takes almost as, no. I was going to say it takes almost as long as the sewing, but the sewing by far is still longer. That depends on the YouTube content. I think one time a long time ago, I did a makeup video where I showed just like my everyday makeup process because people kept asking like, oh, how do you do your makeup? Because you seem to just like get it done so quick. And after I did the makeup video and all the filming for it, I was like, wait, I'm done. That's it. Oh my gosh. Why did I choose sewing as my genre? Yeah. Sewing, as anyone who has operated a machine knows, always takes longer than you think.
Yeah.
But that's.
Well, and you know, you're always like in the quilting world, we're always looking at reels and YouTube shorts and things like that, where the fabric is, you know, lumped on the table and then all of a sudden, boom, it's all cut up. And then all of a sudden it's a little tiny vignette of piecing. And then boom, they're doing this big quilt reveal. And I'm thinking, that was like 3 months of work.
I know. It's a fantasy. We all, like all of us have been exposed either consciously or subconsciously to like the fairy godmother imagery or like the birds and the mice make Cinderella's dress for her. And you're just like, wow, sewing's so magical. But when you're in the trenches, it's like, oh my gosh, how did a whole day go by? And all I made was like one shoulder strap.
Okay. So Wendy, what is your favorite time of day?
I often think I am a person who's very neutral about all times of day. Like I am a morning person, but as long as I am well fed, I can get a second wind at any point in the day. I think afternoon in my studio is definitely the nicest time of day because the sunlight kind of comes in just right and it feels very pleasant. But the morning is the time of day where I feel like there's the greatest possibility and lots of potential. And then the evening is either a time where I'm like, well, before I had a kid, it was a time where I would be like doing the really hard grind or grunt work of sewing. And yeah, now the evening is like my time to decompress, put my kid to bed and just like try to have a little bit of quiet time. Yeah. But yeah, I love all times of day. I feel impartial.
Okay. And what is something you like to do for your own self-care?
Oh, I definitely, weirdly, the thing that I like to do is to be in my studio, but have it not be for YouTube. Like to just blast music, which is something you kind of can't do when you're filming a video because you're trying to capture audio. I'm like blasting music. I'm, you know, so the whole like trope of like sewing clothes while you're in your underwear, like just the things that, like there's no makeup or anything. And I'm just kind of like enjoying myself without feeling like I'm being watched. Weirdly, that's like healing to me to do things for myself. And then otherwise, I'm a person who like loves walking, loves browsing the internet to look for new ideas. I probably should go for like more massages, but I always forget to book them. Oh man, one time I made the mistake of booking a massage in the middle of the day and then I had to come home and keep working on a sewing project. And I was like, why do I feel like I'm undoing this whole massage that I just got? So after that, I learned never plan to continue sewing after the massage.
That's great advice.
Great. I hope that's the one thing you take away from this interview. But
when you get a massage, let it sink in overnight.
Yes, please. I think I don't have any like fancy things. It's, you know, sometimes it's even just like sitting on the ground beside my cat. Our cat does tricks. So then sometimes to clear my mind, I'll just go do tricks with her. She can like give high fives and she can spin and she can like bop her nose onto my finger. And so we'll just like play for a little while. And usually that makes me feel like, okay, I got to step away from everything enough.
Yeah, that is really good. I'm not a cat owner, and I sort of have this notion that cats are very smart and they might not be trainable, but that's good to hear that they are trained. Like, I always thought cats train their owners.
Oh, yeah, that definitely also happens too. But we were so shocked at, we started when she was a kitten. I think part of it was that we were in a pandemic. So we were just at home being like watching YouTube videos and being like, oh, cool. People can train their cats. So. Yeah, we gave it a try with her and she took to it a lot. And it's like quite charming. It's kind of our party trick whenever friends come over is like, oh, do you want to high five our cat?
Tell us about some of your favorite things you've ever made. Like pick a few projects that you've done on YouTube.
Oh boy. I am quite proud of my wedding dress as much as I am like, oh my gosh, I could have made that so much better if I made it now. Yeah. But I'm, you know, at the same time, I've embraced that it's like a time capsule and it captures and a level of ambition and dedication that I am still very proud of. It's funny that it's a project that I associate with so much meaning, but like I didn't get to wear it ever again after the one day. I still have it though. So it's there in case a great idea comes along. The project that has become a bit of a recurring thing, it was never intended to be this way on my channel, is every winter I thrift a blanket and I turn it into some kind of garment, often a coat, which I think makes sense since blankets are quite warm. Yeah. But I've done like wrap coats and long coats. I recently did a scarf jacket with a blanket, and I've even taken a blanket, I think it was an IKEA throw blanket, and I turned into like a Chanel inspired two-piece with like a cute little blazer and a little pencil skirt. And every year I'm quite proud of that one because I feel like I surprise myself. I go in being like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And halfway through, I'm like, why did I think I could do this? And then, and then at the end, I'm like, oh my gosh, it actually worked. I'm so thrilled. So those ones I love. Yeah, that's definitely like one of the bigger highlights each year. I love making party dresses, even though I'm definitely out of the phase of life where I get invited to lots of weddings. So I don't know what I'm doing with these party dresses. And I've also been finding it rewarding to start making clothes for my kid. I think a lot of viewers left comments back when I first announced I was pregnant being like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so cool that your kid will have all this clothes made by you. But I think on the flip side, anyone who's ever had children knows that they just sprout out of their clothing so quick that, it feels like futile sometimes to make clothing for them. And so I figured out ways to make things like Halloween costumes. That's a fun instance to, you know, apply some sewing skills. I've made a matching jacket for her out of the one blanket that I made a jacket for myself. And I have plans this year to make things. I love things that are like more size versatile. Like I have plans to make us matching aprons, for example, because then, you know, like it'll take it a bit longer for her to grow out of that, hopefully. And those are fun. I guess it's just rewarding to see how quickly a garment can come together when the proportions are so much smaller. Yeah. Like when I sew a gathered skirt, I'm talking like a 2 to 3 meter long stitch every time I stitch around the skirt. And with her, it's just like, shoop, and you've made it all the way around.
Yeah. So I love that you're listening to your viewers' feedback. Like, you know, we can't wait till you see baby clothes or whatever. But so has a viewer ever given you any feedback that really, you know, something that's been really heartwarming or I don't know. I'm just like throwing this question at you randomly.
Yeah. It really is quite a mixed bag. And like, I think that maybe is one of the kind of unspoken harder parts of having a job that is so internet facing is like back when I worked in a corporate job, really the quality of my work was judged by my manager and my peers and myself, of course. Like I try to hold myself to a high standard, but like if the company as a whole was making choices that the general public didn't agree with, you know, like it just didn't really reflect on me.
Yeah.
But with working on the internet, doing social media, doing YouTube, it's like you're constantly under performance review every day from the general public. And, you know, that has its pros and cons. The best part is like getting to see those comments of people saying like, this inspired me. I get so excited when people share photos of projects that they've made based off of my videos. And then the downside is like, if people, I don't know, you know how the internet is and people can leave negative comments or unsolicited kind of like feedback. I'm a very constructive person. So even if I have something I want to criticize, I try to word it in a way that's helpful to the listener instead of hurtful. Yeah. And so I think I definitely have like a love-hate relationship with the comments. Sometimes like it's fun to read. Some people make me laugh so hard, but it's also like, oh, once in a while, I guess I do have to take a break, because in the end, as much as the YouTube channel exists because of the viewers and I value and I want their input, in the end, it's not sustainable if I no longer enjoy it, or if I don't, you know, like feel motivated or excited. So yeah, I try to hold all of that in the balance. Certainly the things a lot of the techniques that I do regularly now are because of, you know, having them reinforced through people encouraging me to try new things or like reminding me about, I don't know, little tools or techniques that I forgot, or giving me alternate solutions to problems we were facing.
Well, I love it that there's ideas that have come up that you've done from viewers, but also I think it's really important to just have that connection, like responding to them when they, you know.
Yeah.
So how do you keep up with that? Like you have so many viewers and so many videos and so many millions of views. How do you possibly keep up with the fact that they're all going to, you know, leave little messages here and there?
I don't know. I do read almost all of my comments. I didn't grow up with, I was definitely a later adopter out of my friends of getting a cell phone and things like that. So I consider myself quite a internet spectator. Like I treat the internet like as if the whole mentality of like, leave nothing but your footprints or something like that. And so I read lots of comments, but I don't physically respond to a ton. You know, I try to like interact here and there to show that I really appreciate people, but I feel like holistically the way I try to steer my channel is my way of showing them that I'm listening and that I value them. I never want to post random projects that I feel like are wasting people's time.
Yeah.
And I try to make all the videos packed with information or learnings or inspiration. So in that way, I hope that I'm showing my audience that I respect them.
Well, let's dive into the videos now. So can you remember like that year when, you know, your parents are supporting you and you're really making a go at it? Can you remember the first kind of video that you put up?
Yeah, I can't pinpoint what the exact video was because it honestly felt like a relentless blur of content creation. That whole year was just like so action packed. But there were a few signature videos for sure where it started to feel like, oh man, I'm making some progress here. There was like a really popular backpack style at the time. And so I showed how to make a cute mini version of it using materials that I could buy at the fabric store. That one really hit a chord with people. Like you mentioned at the beginning about like the videos where I show people how to tailor their jeans. I think that's just like such a common request that, you know, the waist is not quite right or the length is not quite right. And that's like the sewing literacy that I feel like is valuable for people to have so that they can kind of take control of their own clothing. And yeah, I would say the internet is a bit confusing. Like you can't really know exactly what's going to hit. You do your best attempt at guessing what people want to see. And so that was a year of like throwing a lot of things at the wall to see what stuck.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think to this day, some of the biggest videos from that time were like the jeans, the backpack, how to draft your own patterns from existing clothing that you have, like what you did with the dress. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of wardrobe staples, I think, were covered back then, like how to make your own hoodie. Or I have one that was like how to turn a round neck t-shirt into a V-neck. It was just like common sewing queries, which probably reflects the way YouTube worked at the time. It was very much by being part of Google, it was a search engine. And so you were trying to think of things that people were searching for Whereas nowadays, YouTube is much more of an algorithm that stretches beyond what people are looking for. And so there's like a degree to which you should cater the video towards something that a person would actually be curious about, but also making it so that it fits in with kind of like the general trend or direction of what people are interested in.
Yeah. So do you remember which video was like the first one to kind of hit? Like, it was like, oh my gosh, I think I might have my first viral video.
I think it was this backpack video. Basically the backpack, oh shoot, I don't want to say the name of it because it's not in English and I always get roasted, but it's that like Fjällräven backpack.
Okay.
I felt like there was one summer where I went on a trip to Vancouver and I literally felt like I could not turn anywhere without seeing this backpack on somebody's back. And so I was like, oh, the design of this backpack is actually quite simple because it's relatively rectangular and they're just using, you know, normal webbing to make the straps. There's not even much padding in the straps or anything. So I gave it a try and yeah, people really loved it because it was just like such a popular item at the time.
Yeah. And now I'm scrolling through your videos right now. And if you're on Wendy's YouTube channel, you can click on videos. You can click on latest. You can click on oldest. You can click on popular.
Don't click on oldest.
I'm on the popular tab right now. And that's where you'll see all the videos that really popped off, that really went the most viral. So we're talking about downsize your jeans, you know, clone your clothes, those kind of things. Do it yourself, lace bralette, some really cool ones. But you even have like some of the intro stuff, like how to buy fabric
and, right,
you know, change your flare jeans into skinny jeans. Like, what, who doesn't want to do that? I mean, the trends are changing, right? And you want to take those clothes you already have and change them into something. I love that. And I'm trying to like just scroll through here and see do it yourself. So make your own t-shirt, make your own hoodies. Those are really staples in your wardrobe. So those are really cool. Okay. So, and we already talked about a few different series of things, but is there anything out there right now that you've done that really hit pretty well and people are like, please bring that back?
Recently, I've been dabbling a little bit more into kind of reviewing or trying things out for people. Last year's for the Met Gala, I ranked all of the dresses by sewing difficulty, which was kind of a different approach because there's a lot of ranking videos that'll come out during the Met Gala, but it's quite subjective, just people sharing like, oh, I like this versus I don't like this, or it's on theme with the Met Gala or not on theme. But I guess part of that discussion made me feel a bit sad because I was like, well, some people worked so hard to make these wild outfits, but they're just being written off because people don't like the way it looks, even though it was like painstakingly hand done. Yeah. So I put together a video where I dived into the details, like if a dress was made of leather, I used that opportunity to explain like leather, unlike a lot of other fabrics, is not self-healing. And so anytime you puncture it, the punctures are permanent, things like that. And that was a fun way to approach kind of assessing maybe like the Fashion Olympics event that is the Met Gala. And people, I think, from that were interested in more of those coming out.
Yeah.
And then like what you mentioned with how there's so much short form content now about sewing and quilting and garment making, I've recently made a video where I kind of actually tried the different hacks that people share and gave my review of whether I felt like they were hacks that were worth adding to your arsenal or hacks that are just like, no, this doesn't actually work and please don't do this. There's so many better solutions. I'm sure we've all seen videos of people using various folded cardstock or pieces of tape to like jazz up the machine to do some trick. And yeah, it was a fun video to actually try those things out and do like a live demonstration to show like, does it work or does it only work sometimes? Through that, I definitely got some techniques that I actually thought were like, I will definitely reuse. I like pivoted to focus on that technique as part of my toolkit. But a lot of the other ones, I was like, aha, as I suspected, this is nowhere near as effective as it appears on the video.
Yeah, that is so cool. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your playlists because you have such a nice variety. I mean, really, it's primarily about sewing and repurposing and doing all the kinds of things that you're doing. But once in a while, you'll sprinkle in health and fitness and parenting and things like that. So tell us about some of your playlists.
Yeah, definitely the core playlists are, I think my most popular one is Can She DIY It, which is probably the most common template on my channel, which is I start out sharing something that inspired me or, you know, it's often like an eye-catching clothing item and I go about the process of like breaking down its design, sourcing the materials, showing the different challenging steps along the way that make the garment kind of have the special intrigue that it does. And that's the most popular one. Then there was a period during COVID, especially where I really wanted to embrace trying new things. I was trying really hard to like push myself out of my comfort zone. And so I think there's like videos in there where I tried to make clothing or accessories out of unconventional items, like making a bag out of sponges or making a corset out of men's shoes. I think in there too, there's like a bit of home decor sprinkled in too, because since we've moved to different apartments, there's been opportunities to do some home projects. There was one where like I cut my own mirrors. I had started with a rectangular mirror and cut the arches into it, which was terrifying, but that was a fun adventure. Those types of things, like tie dye, that was like another thing that I tried. And then I guess just because like I exist and I share my life on the internet, there's a little bit of interest in how my personal life is going and what it's like kind of like living the day to day here in Toronto. And so once in a while, I'll share one of those videos if I feel like I have something interesting to share with my audience. Beyond that, I try to group my playlists based on just what I think people might be looking for. Like I have one where every time I make something that is to cover the top half of your body, all of them go in a playlist called Fashion Tops. And then anytime I make something that's for a bottom, then I call it Fashion Bottoms. If it's a thrift flip, they'll all end up in that playlist in case that's something a person's really interested in.
You also have a really cool playlist called Tech and Home. What's that one all about?
Yeah, Tech and Home. Oh gosh. Well, I think part of YouTube is like you end up kind of becoming a bit of a tech geek because you got to learn about microphones and lighting and cameras and setups. And so that one kind of just covers anytime I get into the behind the scenes and the nitty gritty of it. Some of the way the playlists are built, it's also so that we could show different brands that, oh, these are topics that I cover. This is how you could picture your product or service fitting into like my studio or my work environment. Yeah, I think at the time, there was a lot of interest in what types of hardware people need to get into YouTube. So I was just sharing the setup that I use.
Well, I love the Wendy Tries Everything thumbnail because, you know, it's a picture of you and there's a few examples of things you're trying, but it says on it straight to jail. What does that mean?
That was the video where I was reviewing different types of quote unquote sewing hacks and then giving them my rating. And one of the ratings is straight to jail, which is just like, no, don't do this. You're going to go into sewing jail.
Oh, that is so good. And then, of course, another one that I think will be my favorite as I start to explore it more is like the sewing basics. You have a whole playlist of over 30 videos. So that's especially good, especially if quilters are listening right now and they're thinking of trying some garment making or altering for the first time. So that's really
quilters definitely already have the leg up because I would say like at least 80% of the tools that are required, they already own. And that's probably one of the most intimidating parts about getting into sewing as a general hobby is that, you know, when my friend decided to pick up crochet for fun, all she had to buy was one needle and one roll of yarn. Unfortunately, sewing is just so much more investment, which I think is intimidating to people. And I understand that. And so I think I've made multiple attempts over my years on YouTube to kind of reintroduce some sewing basics to kind of make that first leap a little less intimidating. Actually, currently, a really big project that I've been working on behind the scenes that I'm waiting to share with my audience is a new kind of rendition of this sewing basics and kind of giving them something that can make it feel like, okay, I can do this. Yeah. It's not that scary. And yeah, that once you own a sewing machine, that was already the biggest purchase. After that, the sewing world is only opening more and more.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that you say that, you know, quilters kind of have a leg up, because yes, it is about what you call yourself, right? Or what you tell yourself, because all these years, until I started training to be a quilt judge, I always said I'm just a quilter, or I'm just an art quilter. And I don't really do clothing. Like I'm not a clothing sewer. I've never done a pattern. I've even said that earlier in the podcast, I've never sewn a garment pattern, but I've already made a few garments and everything like that. So, you know, why do I categorize myself that way? Why does it have to be one or the other? It can absolutely be both. And it's kind of eye-opening for you to say that quilters have a leg up.
Oh, they definitely do. They already know how to operate a sewing machine. Yeah. They're already comfortable with sewing a straight stitch. They already know how to unpick stitches, which unfortunately is unavoidable.
Yeah.
They already know how to look at a piece of fabric and decide, I like this fabric or I don't like this fabric. And like, you know, they have their sewing table, they have an ironing board, like that covers off a lot of the large pieces. After that, it's really just, is there something you're excited to make that you can wear?
Yeah.
And if so, then yeah, you're already off to the races. Because I have lots of people, I know people who want to sew, but they don't even own a machine, or they don't even know how to use a machine. But quilters are already so fluent in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. So do you ever have any videos that just don't work out? Like you thought, I thought this one was going to really go really well. And no, didn't go well at all.
Absolutely. Of course. I think all YouTubers do. Yeah, I think this last year, okay, yeah, I had to really like dig back into my memories to remember, but I think having a kid, slowly coming back to YouTube, it was a bit of a transitionary period where it almost felt like I was trying to rediscover myself, what I was interested in, what types of things I wanted to do. And I took that opportunity to make YouTube videos that were a little bit outside of the core kind of like content that I was known for. And so one example is last summer, I tried flower pounding, which was already something really popular, at least on my Instagram algorithm. It's where you hammer flowers into fabric and it's a dyeing technique.
Yeah.
I gave that a try. I hammered a bunch of flowers into some cotton that I bought, and I then sewed it into an apron, like a work apron. And I was quite happy with the process. I thought the way it was shot was beautiful too. I really embraced like working outside so that we felt like it was a very nature-filled video. And when it came out, people just didn't care for it, which is so funny. And yeah, at the time I felt a bit disappointed, but I was like, oh, you know, well, this was something that I really wanted to try and that interests me. And it just doesn't seem to match what my audience is interested in right now. But who knows, maybe there'll be a future time where like they do want to revisit the concept of do-it-yourself dyeing techniques and things like that. And yeah.
Right now, I would say that I would encourage all the quilters who are listening right now to go and check that out, because quilters tend to lean into surface design and they love batiks and fabrics that look like, you know, sometimes they're dyed or made or whatever. So maybe they'll go check that out and enjoy it.
Yeah. And they already work with the right material for it, because like so much of natural dyeing is dealing with 100% natural fiber.
Yeah.
And whereas fashion, on the flip side, often kind of distances itself from the 100% natural because it's like, oh, well, we're trying to, you know, stay away from wrinkling or things looking too stiff. Yeah. So it definitely would be very quilter friendly.
Okay. So right away, we're going to go into the lightning round robin. But before we do that, what is on your design wall right now? What's your current project?
One thing I didn't mention about another thing that dictates my kind of like sewing interest is also definitely in the last few years, my relationship with my own body has actually dictated quite a bit of what I'm interested in sewing. And right now, since I'm expecting and seeing my body change once again, my new project that I have coming up is resuming this kind of like unfinished idea that I had from my first pregnancy, which was like a focus on sewing things that are very size flexible. And so recently I revisited some fabric shirring because I was trying to kind of revisit the technique. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. Why don't I shir fabric more often? So I have an upcoming project where I'm making a dress and there's going to be some shirring. And part of that too is celebrating that, like, of course, it's so cool when clothes fit you just right, but there's also beauty in designing clothing that is meant to be very size flexible and accommodating for all sorts of changes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, even with the dress that I made, it was an A-frame dress, which is pretty forgiving. But when I put it on, I was like, oh, this fits me perfectly. I better go work out. I better stay on the, yeah, I better keep doing the Peloton.
Yeah, yeah. And like, once you start getting into it, you'll notice those are things that naturally are integrated into like commercially available clothing too. Like lots of clothes benefits from like, lots of like summer dresses, for example, will naturally have shirring on the back panel because that way it makes it so that it fits you comfortably and snugly, but they don't have to like get your exact measurements perfectly right. Yeah. Or like straps with the adjustable slider. When you make your own clothes, you almost never add things like the adjustable slider, but yes. Then, you know, through studying ready-to-wear clothing, you start noticing these little pieces that they add so that hopefully when you buy the clothes, you're not like having to nitpick every single fit detail.
Yeah. Okay. So now it's time for the lightning round robin. It's a series of rapid fire questions and it's super fun. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite sewing tool or notion?
It's probably my seam ripper.
We have to be friends with our seam ripper, right?
We have to make peace with it.
Do you do any kind of annual creative escape?
Oh, I think I just take like a break during the Q1-ish time from YouTube, but I don't go anywhere fancy.
Okay. And do you have, well, actually, I loved what you said earlier about just moments, having a few moments to do your own thing with no cameras on, like in your pajamas or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a creative escape, even though it's not a big annual thing where you go somewhere. That's a good way to do it. It's a good way to infuse it into your life all the time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any kind of personal reward system for getting things done?
Yes, probably like the best one is that I need to make something for a specific event. Like this dress that I think I'm planning to make is, I'm hoping, going to be part of a, like a family reunion photo shoot. Okay. So that will be a good way to light a fire.
Ah, yeah. It's good to have that reward at the end. Okay. And what is a skill that you'd still love to learn?
Oh, draping. I'm very much a flat pattern type of person, and I'd love to learn more about how to drape fabric.
Oh, and so is that the part where you're putting it on the mannequin?
On the dress. Yes. That's the part that you're always seeing when you're watching a fashion competition. They're like, you know, viciously pinning it to the dress form. And I actually was on a reality fashion show once in one episode. And as I got stressed leading up to the taping of this episode, I watched a couple of YouTube videos where someone explained how to drape because I was like, shoot, I don't know how to do this technique at all. And actually during the competition, I had to use the draping skills that I just blasted into my brain via YouTube videos. And yeah, from that one experience, I was like, oh, it'd be nice to grow my confidence in this area.
Yeah, that's a really good thing to aspire to. And when I was making my dress, actually, I was at the Bernini University convention and I was actually sewing it in the booth, in the Madeira Threads booth in front of people. And I decided to go down and talk to a fellow who is an absolute expert dressmaker, clothing maker, everything. And I just had a quick little question for him on darts. Yeah. Well, he proceeded to put it on. Is it called a mannequin?
The dress form. Yeah.
The dress form. He put it on the dress form and he goes, oh, honey, we got to take this all apart. And I was like, no. I'm keeping it the way it is. I just have a question about these darts and those darts and everything. And he was trying to explain to me this really complicated dart. And then I thought, no, I'm going back to YouTube. I'm going to do it myself. But he, however knowledgeable he was kind about it, but he was kind of thinking, you probably should start over. I was like, no. It turned out in the end. So
it's your first project. You can't possibly expect to reach the same kind of like standards that he might be operating at because he's been expert in this.
Yeah, and I was just confused about the tiniest little 2-inch dart, because when you made the dart, the edges didn't line up. They were, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was like, what do I do with that? But
it worked out. Still happens. Yeah.
It worked out in the end. Okay. Has there been a mentor who has really influenced you along your sewing journey?
Certainly, my mom continues to influence me, because she's just always whipping up new sewing projects. And she reminds me a lot of like just the simple joy of making something with your own hands. I would say my partner encourages me so much in my work. And then after that, it's like the whole internet as a whole. It's like, it's very inspiring space. There's constantly people sewing and making new things. And it's nice to know that more and more people can have access to sewing knowledge through the internet.
Oh, absolutely. And one of my favorite things on the internet is when you see, whether it's on TikTok or YouTube shorts or whatever, is when someone, like they do the side by side and someone is watching someone do something and then they go, and then they have to go try it. I love those kind of videos because they just show how inspiring people can be. And, you know, you just have to go do it right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. What is your proudest accomplishment?
Oh boy. I am proud. It's like not very tangible, but I'm actually really proud of the sewing skills and level that I am at now compared to where I started, because it's not something I expected. I think I had thought that I would just feel like a beginner forever. But nowadays, there are certain sewing projects I do where at the end, I'm like looking at the finished garment and I'm like, wow, this has so many techniques. The finishes are so clean. People used to ask me like, oh, will you sell your garments? And I'd be so mortified at the idea, because then they could actually see how it looks on the inside. But now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm actually really proud of this. I want to put a garment label in this thing and treat it like it's like high value or whatever. So I don't have like a specific thing that I can point to, but just like as a whole, I can tell I feel much more gratified with my skill level all the time, which is like such a surprising reward.
Yeah. Well, so great to look back at how you've grown over time. I think a lot of people, even especially early in the months of the new year, they don't take that time to reflect on the last year and how much they've grown. So that's a really good thing to have as your proudest accomplishment. You touched on this briefly, but do you have any furry friends in the studio?
Yes, my cat does love to join me here. And her name's Sagwa. She's an exotic short hair. So she's got like a cute little squished face. And she's black and white, kind of like a little bit of a yin yang pattern to her. I wouldn't say she loves the sound of my sewing machine, but she does like to be in the vicinity. I have prepared various stools or chairs that she could find appealing in the room. And I was so happy the first time she actually came to hang out and sit on the chair. I call her, and when she appears in my YouTube video, I call her my inspector, because it always seems like she's like sniffing the fabric or like checking my patterns or walking around to see if this factory is orderly.
Yeah. And I love how you mentioned earlier that you like to spend a little bit of floor time with her once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so nice to just like hang out with her for a little bit. I imagine her world to be so nice. Like she just naps and eats and gets petted, and it's kind of enjoyable to bask in that with her for a little while.
Yeah, we were so worried for a while there with our lab, thinking we're not giving her enough exercise. Should we try to do an hour a day? And then we realized they need to sleep 19 hours a day.
I know, yeah.
That's a lot. But they do have a nice little world, don't they, our pets?
Yeah, I'm envious.
Okay, so thank you for braving the lightning round, Robin. That was really fun. What's your web address again?
Yeah, my website is withwendy.com. And if you go on YouTube and search for With Wendy, all one word, WITHWENDY, you will definitely see some of my projects come up.
Okay, so that's where we'll find everything that you bring to the world, all this wonderful content. Where's the best place for quilters to connect with you on social media?
I'm probably the most active on Instagram. I love checking my DMs to see what people have to share. So on Instagram, I'm also With Wendy.
Okay. Now, as we wrap up, what do you want people to take away most from our conversation today?
One, don't sew after the massage appointment. Yeah, I guess I honestly do resonate with sewing and garment construction being very intimidating. And I just think like my whole YouTube channel has come to exist to encourage people that like it's really not that scary. Sometimes I find we take for granted that we wear clothing every day, that the way it fits us does matter to us, and that our clothes kind of like convey an aspect of us to the people who see us. And the more my channel is able to provide sewing literacy or confidence in sewing so that people can kind of like, you know, tackle their clothes in a way that is satisfying to them, that's very rewarding to me. I've found a lot of joy in exploring myself and what I like through clothing, fashion, and designing my own things. And it's, yeah, I meet people all the time who seem interested in that adventure too. And so I just hope to share with people that, like, of course it's intimidating, but you have to start somewhere. I started somewhere, and now I'm at the point where it's like actually intensely rewarding to see what I'm capable of doing just because I've kept at it. So yeah. Sewing is fun.
Yeah. Well, Wendy, sewing and do it yourself and having fun with the things that you do is slightly outside the realm of quilting, but I can't think of a better person to have brought on the show. So it's been such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So that was my show with Wendy Liu. This is such an inspiring story of a young creator who just put her head down, did the work. She shows up as herself to do what she loves, and the community she's built is loving her right back. Something I love about Wendy's story today is she makes it so achievable. Like, the risk level is really high in the projects that she takes on, but she proves over and over that it's so worth it to give it a try. She kind of has this sweet and humble character with words like mistake maker and risk taker on her Instagram bio, and she really infuses her story into her channel. Beyond the sewing, she sometimes talks about travel, self-care, personal updates as her family grows, and so much more. So if you've been thinking about diving into your closet to give some of your clothes a makeover, or you love thrifting but nothing ever fits, Wendy Liu is the creator for you. And I loved sharing her story today. Have you heard the news? Quilter on Fire is now on YouTube. I started up all new content at the end of 2023, and I've been having so much fun. From tutorials to unboxings and amazing interviews with quilters and artists at big shows like QuiltCon, you'll find all kinds of quilty goodness. If you love this podcast, please go subscribe to Quilter on Fire on YouTube today. The Square One Textile Art Workshop is now available. You can sign up anytime. You'll learn 6 fiber art techniques and create an art quilt start to finish. It's an on-demand course to take on your own time anytime, and you'll have it forever in your student portal. And if you've bought this course before, go back and check it out now, because I've changed all of the original replays to brand new videos, and you get it forever with your original purchase. At only $37, it's such a great deal, so go to Quilter on Fire to sign up for the Square One Textile Art Workshop today. Thank you for listening to the Quilter on Fire podcast. Until next time, dream big and have fun in the studio with the Quilter on Fire.